You know, in getting ready for this show, we found this video clip. It was recorded during the homecoming celebration at the University of Missouri on October 10th.
Like most colleges, homecoming at Mizzou, the flagship school for the state, is a really big deal.
And in this video, the homecoming parade is about to get underway.
In the lead car is Tim Wolf, president of the University of Missouri's four-campus system. He's sitting in the back seat of a red 1970s muscle car. It's a convertible and the top is down.
That's when a group of black students steps in front of the vehicle.
Hi, Tim Wolf. How you doing?
And using bullhorns and their own bodies, they form a line and demand to know how Wolf plans to address a series of racial incidents on campus.
But he doesn't get out of the car to talk with the protesters.
This is not an indictment on white folks, but it is an indictment on white structures and white supremacy.
Then say that!
Wolf's car inches forward and starts bumping protesters out of the way. Eventually, the police are called to disperse the students. In response, the crowd, almost all white, cheers. After being pushed onto the sidewalk, a young black protester grabs a bullhorn and says this.
And the parade went on. But the story wasn't over. Nearly a month after the homecoming incident, student activists again confronted Wolf as he walked out of a fundraiser in Kansas City. They asked him to define systematic oppression. That exchange also was captured on video.
I will give you an answer, and I'm sure it will be a wrong answer.
You gonna Google it?
I will give you an answer, and I'm sure it will be a wrong answer.
What do you think systematic oppression is?
Systematic oppression is because you don't believe that you have the equal opportunity for success.
You don't believe that you have
By now, you've probably heard or read headlines about what happened next. A student named Jonathan Butler went on a hunger strike, vowing not to eat until Wolf stepped down. Then some MU football players said they wouldn't play until Wolf left. And on November 9th, he did.
That same day, officials demoted Mizzou's campus chancellor, R. Bowen Lofton. The university system worked quickly to install a new interim president who has vowed to address racial issues on campus, among other things.
And as much as we, like the rest of the nation, have been following this Mizzou saga, there was something that just kept bugging us.
Yeah, why was it so hard for Tim Wolf, the president of a top-tier university system, to define systematic oppression?
Didn't anybody ask him about race relations before he got the job?
On today's show, we go in search of those answers.
We live here.
We live here.
We live here.
We live here.
A project exploring race,
class, power,
poverty,
systems, and the people they touch.
I'm Tim Lloyd.
And I'm Camille Stanley. And from St. Louis Public Radio, this is We Live Here.
So just a quick programming note that we had planned to make this show about gaps in academic achievement, and we'll still get to that, but we felt like with all the student activism that's happening on college campuses across the country, we needed to spend some more time with this story.
Okay, back to our first question. Did anybody ask Tim Wolf about race before he got the job as president of a public university system with 77,000 students?
In all honesty, not that I recall. I think, and probably that was the case with all the other people we interviewed.
That's Wayne Good. He was on the selection committee that picked Wolf to lead the UM system 4 years ago. Wayne tells us they went through dozens of candidates before settling on Wolf.
It could even be seen as somewhat insulting to ask a lot of people who were all at a pretty good level in their careers whether or not they've felt they could deal with that, because you,
when you
would,
say deal you with would, that, like what do you mean by deal with that?
Well, deal with any issues that may arise, and they don't arise all the time or everywhere. But when they do come up, you
any issues that may arise, just to be clear, about race or about...
Well, about race and human resources.
Wayne tells us that race relations just weren't top of mind. And in his opinion, they've gotten a lot better since when he was on campus.
I can tell you when I was a student there in the late 50s, I graduated in 60, there was a lot of racism. There was a lot of racism everywhere, but on the campus too, and a lot of prejudice over religion. You know, a lot changed in the 60s and since then, but some things with some people, I guess, never change, and you had this situation here.
You know, given the history of that, why wouldn't that come up? Why wouldn't race relations on Mizzou's campus come up, or should it have come up?
Well, in the interview process?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm talking about a time that's over 50 years ago. So, you know, that's a different era. I mean, a really, truly different era. Things are sometimes bad, as we've seen just recently, but nothing like it was then.
So it's probably fair to say that, yes, overall things have changed since the 1950s. But when we started calling a bunch of Black alumni, they said not as much as you might think.
Hello.
Hi, is this Beverly?
Yes, it is.
Hi, it's Camille Stanley from St. Louis Public Radio.
Hi, how are you, Camille?
I'm good. Is now a good time?
Sure.
Awesome. So this is Beverly Isom of Atlanta. She's one of more than a dozen Black alumni who shared their memories with us in the last few weeks. Beverly went to Mizzou in the late 70s and said she remembers several racial incidents, but there's one that really sticks out. It was during a history class. Beverly was the only Black person out of about 17 students studying the history of the Old South after 1865. And that day, a young white male graduate assistant was teaching.
And what he said was that cotton was often referred to as, and he said, the nigger cloth is the exact word that he used. And I paused for a second, but in the moment that I paused, literally, I felt the glare of the entire classroom, kind of their heads turn simultaneously and kind of look at me. And I was thinking, wow. And as I remember it, he said it twice. Some 30 years later, after hearing that, I still feel the same way as if I was a 19-year-old sitting in the classroom hearing the teacher say that.
Beverly was not the only Black alumni we spoke to with memories about the open and often casual use of the N-word on Mizzou's campus. Nearly everyone we spoke to pointed to similar experiences, like alumna Vivian King. She was crowned Homecoming Queen in 1985. Her king was also Black, the first time that had happened in Mizzou history. Vivian clearly remembers the excitement and dismay that followed the announcement. As she walked up to the stage, she passed by a table of white alumni.
And one of them called us a racial slur and said basically that they could not believe they let two of us win, using the N-word to describe us.
Now, Vivian and Beverly have had decades to sit with their memories. But for alumni like 24-year-old Ricky Byrd, the often painful and uncomfortable reality that comes with being a Black person on a predominantly white campus like Mizzou is more fresh. Ricky grew up in St. Louis, and she picked Mizzou because of its nationally recognized journalism program. She also figured things had changed.
When I was applying for colleges, colleges send out a lot of, you know, recruitment paperwork and brochures and pamphlets, and there was a lot of paperwork coming to my door about the diversity that was at Mizzou. And you would see pictures of Black students talking to white students, and that made me really excited. And that's not to say that that wasn't the case, but it didn't play itself out on that campus.
In 2010, when Ricky was a sophomore, white cotton balls were thrown in front of the Black Cultural Center. Two white males were eventually reprimanded.
Placing cotton balls in front of a Black Cultural Center was very blatant racism. It represented picking cotton, and there was no way to look at it any differently. So to see kind of the way that it swept under the rug, was a little bit discouraging.
Black alumni say that kind of disappointment spans generations. And it's one of the reasons Sean Taylor, who went to Mizzou in the mid-80s, paid so much attention to what happened there this fall.
I mean, this student protest at Mizzou has just opened this encyclopedia of repressed memories for black alums. When I read that Tim Wolf was kind of taking an apathetic view toward these incidents, it rang true. It's like, yeah, I remember that. I remember when things would happen and we would try to engage the administration, we would try to get change. And you put the request out there and nothing ever would really come back. And I mean, the thing is, when we go to school, I mean, going to college is one of the most exciting times in your young life. And I wish that I had had the type of experience at my college where I would want to go back to homecoming. I have not been back to that campus since I left it. And I know I made a comment to some of my fellow alums yesterday that, you know, it's because of Mizzou that we wear this tough skin that we live in today. And it's one of the reasons, and as African-Americans, believe me, that the armor has been added on along the way. But, you know, when I think back to just that first semester at Mizzou where I encountered such blatant bias, racism, from a professor, my literature professor, who absolutely refused to talk to me about a bad grade she gave me on a paper and told me, you people are always trying to get over, and literally ran away from me. I was in shock. I was running behind her down the hall going, what do you mean? What do you mean? I need to talk to you about this, you know? And she refused to talk to me about it. You know how uncomfortable it was to have to go back to that class, you know, a class where she never called on me in the first place? I mean, I sought help, and I did get, you know, at least I was validated in some way when I spoke to the dean of the J school about the paper. Mm-hmm. He agreed that I should have gotten a better grade. But I never found out if there was any resolution to that. I never found out if that professor had been spoken to, if she had been reprimanded. It's like it happened. It still stays with me. But in terms of the complaint, it might as well have disappeared into thin air. There was never any follow-up. So that's the environment that, and that was in 1984. So to see students still dealing with that level of apathy and that, let's just let it quietly go away. It's almost like they're expecting the students to live in the Jim Crow South, where you can have rocks hurled at you and people can hurl epithets at you, but you're supposed to just keep smiling and be glad to be there. Just be glad to be there. I mean, how dare they take us down that road? How dare they take this current generation down this road? I applaud them. They stood up, these black millennials, these kids that we're not taking it.
So clearly, Mizzou has a shaky history of making black students feel welcome on campus. But whose job is it to fix that?
We put that question back to Wayne, the former curator for the university system who helped pick Tim Wolf without bringing up race or diversity during the hiring process.
Well, it is with top leadership, but it's with the chancellor, as most everything operates.
But the chancellor answers to the president.
He does. There's no doubt about that. I mean, you can't take the president out of the mix. But the way the campuses operate, the daily, day in, day out operation is under the chancellor. The you know, he does report to the president, but he doesn't report on, you know, 30 different things every day on what's going on campus. So you ask me where it lies. The responsibility basically lies with the chancellor on all four campuses.
Oh, but sure. Still, you're looking at a campus where there's roughly 7% of all students are black. Roughly 3% of all faculty are black. That's clearly not representative of the state's overall population. This is a four-year public university, part of a system of four campuses, 77,000 students. Is it a blind spot? Was it a blind spot in the hiring process to not say we need to be still dealing with these issues of race?
It might be a little bit in Columbia. It's certainly not in St. Louis. Mm-hmm. And for the most part, Those are things that are managed at the campus level, chancellor and down, not at the system level. And one thing that I've said recently, if you're going to blame Tim Wolf for the situation that turned out to be what it was in Columbia, then you need to give him credit for a very good situation on the UMSL campus.
We should point out that St. Louis Public Radio's reporting confirms what Wayne is saying about UMSL, which is shorthand for the University of Missouri, St. Louis.
Dale Singer, our education reporter, talked with Black student leaders at UMSL. They say things aren't perfect, but nowhere near as tense as what's happening at Mizzou. But it's also worth noting that the representation of Black instructors at UMSL is still low, only 7%. You can find those numbers and Dale's story at our website, stlpublicradio.org.
Okay, so at this point, we have the answer to our first question. No one asked Tim Wolf about race before he got the job, according to Wayne Good. And Stephen Bradley, who heads up the African American Studies program at St. Louis University, says this points to a deeper issue.
It almost seems unconscionable.
We should step in here just to mention that Professor Bradley earned his PhD at Mizzou.
Flagship universities are designed to create the leadership of the state. And so what kind of leaders are you creating if we can forget to ask questions about racial diversity, if we can forget to address these issues of hiring and recruitment and retention of Black faculty, staff, and students? That's a bad look. The reflection right now on Mizzou is that there are gaps in our way of thinking.
Sort of these kind of gaps in thinking that Professor Bradley is talking about exist at other universities. I mean, are other schools not asking top leaders about race before they get jobs?
Unless the universities had a problem in that, in the area of diversity, it normally does not come up.
That was Raymond Cotton, a lawyer from Washington, D.C.
I'm a partner in the law firm of Mintz Levin, Cohn, Ferris, Glovsky, and Popio PC.
And in that capacity, he's negotiated hundreds of contracts for universities and college presidents.
I just finished a contract for the incoming president of the University of Washington.
Basically, he sees both sides of this, and Cotton tells us this story about what colleges are normally looking for in a college president.
One chair said to me, half jokingly, and only half jokingly, his top three were raising money, because without the resources, they can't do anything else.
And again, Cotton is talking about how college president searches work in general. But we know that in the case of Tim Wolf, his business background was a big selling point. And Professor Bradley says this is often not a coincidence.
All of this stuff is happening in context. You know, you think about the stock market crash, and just how bad the economy was in 2008 and that sort of thing. Universities, one of the first things that people stop thinking about when money goes bad is diversity. That's one of the first things that people stop thinking about. And so maybe now's a time when the unemployment rate is at 5% mm-hmm. and the Dow is way up above, 15,000, 16,000. Maybe now is a time that we can circle back and try to deal with these things head on.
So I wondered, how do things get better? Where do we go from here?
If indeed, Camille, if indeed things are going to get better at the University of Missouri and many of these universities, the University of Missouri is not unique in any kind of way, then people will have to be intentional about diversity. And what the problem with that is some people will feel as though, if you're working to get more Black students and faculty members and staff members and counselors at the center, then you're denying opportunities to good white candidates and that sort of thing. That might be the wrong way to think about things. A better way to think about things would be, how will the larger student population, so at Mizzou in Columbia, there's 27,000 students there, how will they benefit from the normalization of Blackness? That is, when students have more of an opportunity to hang out with Black kids, maybe they wouldn't think it's such a good idea to put on blackface during Halloween. Like, when students have a Black professor in a subject that they wouldn't necessarily expect to see a black professor, it normalizes blackness to where they understand that you know that black people are capable in a number of different ways of doing any number of things. And so those are benefits to not just black students, to not just black faculty members and that sort of thing, but those are systemic kind of benefits.
It's worth repeating here that Mizzou, like a lot of colleges in this country, can't give this experience that Bradley describes to their students right now. The demographics just aren't there yet. For example, black students only make up 7% of the population on MU's campus. So we decided to check in with someone who knows what's going on at Mizzou.
That person?
Becky Smith.
Becky Smith from KBIA, the public radio station in Columbia. So she's been covering the story at Mizzou for months, including a lot of the activism by a group called Concerned Student 1950, which took the lead in the recent protests.
And she starts out by telling us about all the stuff that's been happening on Yik Yak.
I don't know if you know what Yik Yak is.
You know what Yik Yak is, right? Yeah, I have no idea what Yik Yak is either. You have to be under 25 to know what Yik Yak is.
Apparently. So, turns out Yik Yak is an app where you can leave anonymous comments based on your location.
Okay, so I know we're joking here about this app, Yik Yak, but Becky Smith of KBIA tells us there were some really, really serious threats put out on Yik Yak. And in some respects, it's kind of a good example of what's happening at Mizzou right now.
The threats were basically like, I'm going to stand my ground and shoot every black student I see. And so like very, very targeted hate language directed at black students at Mizzou. But then we've also had students now who are working to like try and make Yik Yak a more positive environment, leaving lots of positive comments and trying to keep people from posting that hate speech. So I think that like even just Yik Yak is a great example of what's happening on campus.
So you went out recently, right, and talked to some students in person?
I did, yeah. I went by the Student Center on MU's campus because it was raining outside to kind of see what was on the mind of some white students at MU. I walked around and tried to talk to a couple, and some students were busy. And when I finally did talk to some students, neither of the two that I talked to were comfortable giving their last names. One of the students I talked to, his name was David. He is a junior here at MU. And he said he'd actually read the demands from Concerned Student 1950.
They want to hire these professionals, particularly of color, and obviously, I think that is wrong. I know you cannot discriminate in the workforce based on color, and if I have a top university, I would want to the best teachers and staff that I could find, regardless of color.
So that's what David had to say about the specific demands made by Concerned Student 1950. But I talked to another student, Tori, and she feels a little bit differently about it.
I definitely do understand where they're coming from, and I think as a student body, we do have the right to make those decisions. And in some respects, I believe things did go a little bit far in the way that some things were handled. But all in all, as students, we do have those rights to make the decisions because it is our campus. So.
Great. Well, I'll just ask you one more question because I obviously don't want to keep you, but do you see racism as a problem on this campus that needs to be addressed?
You know, personally, I've never had to deal with it, but, you know, I have heard stories of it, and, you know, it happens all over the country, it happens all over the world, and so I believe if we take, you know, one step at a time to solve these issues, it's going to make our campus a better place, and so we just have to take the baby steps, little steps at a time.
I think for a lot of white students, this is the first time they've ever had to have these sorts of conversations. And I was walking to an assignment on Carnahan Quad, where the Concerned Students 1950 were camped out. And I overheard some students as they were walking by saying, you know, why are they still here? There's actually a group on campus called Diversity Peer Educators. They're run through the Multicultural Center. And they go to classes and clubs and groups like that. And these students have conversations, lead conversations, about things like power structures and systems of oppression and privilege. I actually spoke with one of these diversity peer educators. His name was Landon Jones, and he's a sophomore here at MU.
Since this has happened on campus, we've had a huge increase in the organizations that have requested facilitations from us. People specifically want us to talk about Concerned Student 1950, and something that I've had to repeat constantly is that none of our members as diversity peer educators were a part of the original 11 founders of Concerned Student 1950, so we can't necessarily speak on their behalf on what their movement is, but we can talk about why it was created based on the injustices that we see on our campus and just talk about the impact that it's had on students.
So, final recap. Race was not a big topic during Tim Wolf's selection process, according to former board curator Wayne Good.
This is despite the fact that generations of Black students have been targets of discrimination on Mizzou's campus.
And experts like Professor Bradley say that what this really points to is a system that only pays attention to the concerns of Black people when it's forced to.
All right, so now what?
Well, now we've got a new guy in charge.
That's true.
And he's someone who knows Mizzou's troubled history with race intimately, as a student, professor, and administrator.
His name is Mike Middleton. He's one of the first Black people to graduate from MU's law school and retired from his post as deputy chancellor earlier this year. At the end of a press conference after he was named interim president, a reporter asked him if he's ever felt marginalized on campus.
Every day. In all three capacities. Is that it?
Sir, in terms of...
Yes, ma'am.
So it's hard to hear on tape, but Middleton does get one last question. How would he explain marginalization to white people?
Boy, that's a complex question.
That's what a lot of people, I think,
yeah.
It's
so subtle. I think women understand it. I think people with a sexual orientation that is not a male-centered perspective on sexuality understand it. I think other people of color understand it. I think folks in power in the majority who have never lived it and never experienced it have difficulty understanding it the way those of us who have been minoritized do. But it is just the feeling of not being heard, not being respected, being placed at the margins of what's really happening in the world. And it happens. And it happens inadvertently. No one is to blame for this. I remember as a child reading the Brown versus Board of Education decision. And there was a statement in that decision that segregation in public schools did damage to the hearts and minds of Negro children in ways unlikely ever to be corrected. I think they missed a point. Segregation in public schools, Jim Crow laws, and if you go back to the beginning, slavery, that whole continuum did damage to the hearts and minds of all children in ways unlikely ever to be corrected. So I sympathize with white people who don't understand. I don't blame white people who don't understand. I blame our ugly history, and I think it's important that we learn that history and understand it so that we can get beyond that history and build the institution and the country that we imagine rather than the institution or country that is.
it's the time in the show when we ask you to say nice things about us on iTunes and share this with your friends.
Yeah, and listen to it with your friends, too. Maybe you want to listen to it with your mom or your dad or your brother or your sister or your coworkers, whatever. Spread this show around, if you will.
Yeah. If you go to iTunes and give us some good reviews, rate us, like us, do whatever you need to do, that would help us out a lot. And also, we have some news. We have a new Twitter. Mm-hmm. So you can interact with us at WeLiveHereSTL.
So We Live Here is produced by me, Tim Lloyd.
And me, Camille Stanley.
Shula Newman is our editor. And Margie Fry Vogel is the editor of St. Louis Public Radio.
Our theme music was composed by Cassie Morgan.
And from St. Louis Public Radio, this is We Live Here.
Support for this podcast comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.